Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's a dark time for the old lady. Although the Max has been restored, Empoli troops have driven his forces into Azzurri exile, and the CR7 dream has been destroyed. Elsewhere, a young Vinnie Italian has established a secret base in Florentine Hills. We'll speak about that too, plus all the usual nonsense, and answer your questions in this episode of Scudetto. Hello, and welcome to Scudetto. And welcome to a special episode of Scudetto, because this is 50 episodes since we started recording. So, Kenny and Buzz, could you please raise your bats / your beers just to celebrate the half century? Thank you very much.
Cheers, guys.
Yep.
Cheers, guys.
And cheers to our listeners.
Cheers to our listeners. Absolutely. Exactly. I think we should be proud of ourselves for making it to 50 episodes. We've done a whole season. So that's an episode a week, plus the Euros. That makes up to 50 episodes all around. Sorry, what are you saying, Buzz?
And the good thing is we're not in the same country, so we were unable to murder each other throughout this process.
Yeah, exactly. The national borders have been a good separator at times during this process.
Other times, I just wanted to hug you.
that's also been prevented. So yeah, congratulations to us. And congratulations to you, Buzz. I doubted you last week, but you have managed to best me in the tipping / predictions league. 9 points to my 7. So you've actually improved our standing in the league considerably. I said that we were mid-table last week, but when I looked closely, I saw that we were joint bottom. But now we are actually mid-table.
And had Torino not got their goal in the 89th minute, I would have had another correct score, which would have seen us shoot up the table.
Anyway, Kenny, how are you feeling about your stab at the predictions this week?
Yeah, well, presumably it will be next week, I imagine. So I've got plenty of time to think about it.
That's true.
But yeah, quietly confident.
Good stuff. And while we've got you, how are you doing this week, and what sort of beer are you drinking?
I'm doing good this week, thank you. And I'm actually having a few weeks off drinking altogether, really. So I've got myself an alcohol-free beer, and it is a BrewDog Punk AF, which I'm never really sure if it stands for alcohol-free or punk as fuck, IPA. Yeah.
Controversial one, actually, if Twitter rumors are to be believed, but maybe we'd best stay clear of that.
Yeah, but I mean, I personally prefer their other alcohol-free, the Nanny State, but this one's all right. Not too bad. Nice and refreshing. Tastes a bit like beer.
That's always a positive for a civilized beer. How about you, Baz? Have you cracked out another special from your collection?
I'm actually drinking a standard Malka IPA, which I've had in the past. I thought since we're celebrating a special episode, I wasn't going to torture myself with new discoveries.
Yeah, I've gone down the similar route, actually. I've got a Citra from the Punikin Brewery, one that I've had on the podcast before. Very nice, very nice fruity pale ale. Anyway, with beers done, let's move on. And let's start on the international break, shall we? Obviously, the Azzurri equaling Spain's record of 35 games undefeated, although in quite unspectacular fashion, with a draw against Bulgaria. Obviously, it makes the game at the weekend against Switzerland a bit of a must-win, really, doesn't it, Kenny?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that would be a good way to break the record, fingers crossed. So yeah, I mean, let's hope that Italy show up a little bit more than they did. I actually only managed to catch the highlights of the game, but by all accounts, it looks like they were very highly frustrated, and yeah, lacking a bit in cutting edge in the game. So hopefully, yeah, hopefully they do the business against Switzerland and, yeah, break Spain's record rather than equaling it.
Yeah, you say they were lacking in cutting edge, which, I mean, fair assessment over the 90, but it was a lovely goal from our friend Freddie Church, wasn't it, Baz?
Yeah, actually, both goals are merit a little bit of complimentary words, because the Bulgaria goal was quite nice within itself, but the Italy goal was quite special with Chiesa running down the right wing, which is actually the position that Pirlo had in mind for him, so a slight controversy there. But playing a very neat 1-2 with Immobile and then hitting it like he knows how to hit it. At that point, it really looked like Italy were going to dominate this game and get the 3 points. And if you look at the possession stats alone of 78%, I don't remember an Azzurri side holding the ball that much in any game. But Bulgaria were able to sting Italy with their one and only attack, which probably came due to a couple of mistakes from the Azzurri themselves, who, it has to be said, in September, Italy never performed well. The fact that they got a draw and it wasn't a loss or something like that is actually a good omen, particularly if you look across Europe and you see that France was struggling, Germany struggled as well. So of the big nations, probably England were the only one who had an easy round.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously a bit of a disappointing result, but Italy still sit top of the group. And yeah, you'd certainly expect them to sort that out as European champions. But yeah, while we're on the Chiesa topic, should we talk about a bit of club football and what's going on at Juventus? Because obviously two disappointing results in a row now, and they seem to have sold their star man. So how concerned should Juventus fans be, do you think, Kenny? Is this the beginning of the end?
Well, no, I mean, I would say that that's probably a bit extreme. Certainly, Allegri has a job to do. And I mean, it seems to be that they've prioritized. I mean, we go back to saying what we said when Pirlo joined, really, which was they're prioritizing sort of starting a new cycle. And I think what Juventus are discovering is that even they can't, completely build a new cycle and just stay at the top. I mean, you can't do that in one of the top leagues in Europe. I think there was a comment that Chiellini was picked up or by lip readers, I guess, saying to Max Allegri on the sidelines, where he was saying non è squadra, this isn't a team. And I think there's a lot in that, really, because there were obviously some really good individual performances, certainly. I mean, Chiesa, you've just mentioned him, obviously, for Italy, but he was on fire at times in the Empoli game. But equally, there were some really sort of subpar. It's very obvious that there were sort of certain positions that need to be filled. This is like, I mean, if you look through this team, there's a lot of quality there, really. And I think it's just going to take time for Allegri to get them to play Allegri-style football. For example, I mean, Dybala, I can't really see him not featuring for Juve. I think he'll have to come back into the fold, probably more in kind of a number 10 role. You look at the options on the right, they've got Kulusevski and obviously Chiesa, and they've got Morata up top. They've got players who can play in a 4-2-3-1 formation. They've got the players to kind of fill that. Another thing to be said is that they've got new signings to come in as well. I mean, Locatelli, obviously, to come in. Moise Kean to come in, who haven't been integrated yet. It's a work in progress. And to be honest, all of this talk about what a disaster for Juve. I mean, obviously, it's not good for Juve to lose at home to Empoli, but we have to give credit to Empoli, because I mean, this is second week in a row that I've seen Empoli play, and I've been so impressed with them. They just look like a real unit. I mean, they know, you know, when to press, they know when to sit back, but I think most of all, they know how to do everything as a unit. So there were times when Juve broke in this game and players were isolated. That wasn't the case with Empoli. When Empoli were breaking, you know, there were like three or four guys busting a gut to get up there. They're just a really, really enjoyable team to watch. And I reckon they could actually be one of the surprise packages. So, Yes, a bad result for Juve, obviously, because they're Juve. But, I mean, let's give credit to Empoli and acknowledge the fact that this was a difficult match and that Empoli gave Lazio a run for their money in the first game as well. You know, that score didn't really reflect that. But yeah.
We did mention last week, didn't we, that we both thought Empoli were really impressive and really deserved a lot more out of that game, like the 3-1. Really just didn't reflect the run of the game. So, yeah, I mean, like you said, fair play to Empoli. While we're on Juventus and talking about Ronaldo, I guess we should just mention, as it's resurfaced in the media and other podcasts have been talking about it, there are obviously extremely serious allegations against Cristiano Ronaldo. Obviously, we have no kind of more insight on that than anyone else, but just would encourage people to research and be aware of that. But having, you know, kind of said that, and we've got no choice really but to put it to one side and talk about the football, Boaz, like, how much do you think Juventus would be really kind of missing Cristiano on the pitch?
I think the big question is, did the Cristiano fail Juventus in the past 3 years, or did Juventus fail Cristiano? And I think a big caveat on this whole discussion has to be the fact that we were in the middle of a pandemic, and the huge profits that Juventus were obviously planning on making through merchandising and other endeavors using Ronaldo, despite the allegations that you mentioned earlier, that obviously didn't materialize at all because of the period we're living in. So there's a big what if on the whole transfer. But I think ultimately everyone comes out a winner in this saga. Obviously, Juventus would have preferred to have known that their star man was leaving towards the beginning of the transfer window, so that they might have been able to kind of make amends and prepare. But ultimately, Ronaldo kind of served as an alibi for the rest of the team. When he didn't score, you could say, well, Ronaldo didn't score, and this is why we didn't win. And now it's time for these great players, or on paper at the very least, and some of them are already established. We've spoken a lot about Chiesa and what a phenomenal jump he's made since going to Juve. Well, now is the time for the likes of him and Moise Kean, as we mentioned, to mature and take this Juventus side on its shoulders. I think there's a nice hark back to the 90s, where there was a spine of Azzurri players in the Juventus side, and this is what we're seeing now. And with Allegri, this is it's a very interesting project. And as opposed to the last time when he came in, when it was a kind of a tank that was already on a roll, this time he's in charge of a rebuilding process, and it'll be interesting to know to see how he copes with that.
Yeah,
for sure. I think jury's definitely still very much out on that project, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see it. And we should also talk about Inter, who were another club that we were saying were in crisis maybe a couple of months back, but have started the season very well, and perhaps even more impressive in the second week than they were in the first week, but showing some character coming from behind.
I think it was hard for me to be super fearful or excited, whichever you choose, about the win against Genoa, because ultimately Genoa always capitulate against Inter. But this victory showed some real character. They had to come back from behind. They weren't playing against a team that was kind of sitting back and letting Inter do what they want. And yet they managed to pull through. And in addition, another new signing got on the score sheet in the shape of Correa, which means that their summer transfer work, which also, it has to be said, was all completed towards the beginning of the transfer window. So you have to give credit to Inter for doing the work properly. And on the pitch, Inzaghi is clearly the right man for this team.
Yeah, I think one of the things that you said, which you attributed to Gabriele Marcotti last week, Boaz, was that Dzeko isn't an upgrade on Lukaku. But I wonder if the three players that they have at their disposal now, Lautaro, Dzeko and Correa, are an update or an upgrade, sorry, on Lukaku, Lautaro and Alexis Sanchez. Because to me, it does look like Inter might get more out of Correa.
Sanchez in there instead of Eriksen.
Yeah.
And a little bit like the Juventus chat, with Lukaku leaving, of course, it's time for Lautaro to take the team on his shoulders. But I think the big positive for Inter is that their defense has been untouched and their midfielder has pretty much been untouched. And last year, that was what essentially built their winning streak. Another thing that has to be said is that Vidal, who looked kind of lost and even got one of our award names, is suddenly making a real impression as kind of an impact sub, and he's been phenomenal in these last two games. So maybe Inzaghi will be able to resuscitate Vidal as well.
Yeah, and the last club that we want to talk about in the kind of main section here, I think, Kenny, you must have written this question about Fiorentina. Is this the year that they return to the top table? I mean, it seems quite optimistic given the first results that we've seen. What's leading you to ask that question?
Well, I mean, yeah, I was really keen to speak about Fiorentina because I think there's a lot of exciting stuff going on there. I should clarify that when I say to the top table, I don't mean are they going to be challenging for the Scudetto. I think even the most optimistic Fiorentina fan would not claim that. But I think to be in and among the top, the Seven Sisters, the modern day Seven Sisters, I think they could be. We mentioned Napoli being a surprise package, probably lower down the table. I think Fiorentina could surprise a few people this season. Vincenzo Italiano's got them playing really, really attractive football. I think it has to be highlighted. I think Fiorentina have probably, if you look through the clubs in Serie A, we've spoken about a lot of the big stars going. I think they've probably had the best transfer window in Serie A. First of all, managing to keep hold of Vlahovic, but also the signings that they've brought in. So obviously, Odriozola and Torreira are kind of recent additions, but Gonzalez as well, who plays on the wing, has been an absolute revelation to me. I know that he starred in the Bundesliga, but I have to be honest, I didn't know too much about him. And I think that front three, the understanding that Callejon, Vlahovic and Gonzalez had was absolutely unbelievable. And you look at the just like through the spine of the team as well. I mean, the midfield, Jack Bonaventura, Pulgar, Castrovilli, very, very decent. I think Fiorentina actually might be glad. I know they were trying to offload Amrabat, but I think they might be glad to keep hold of him because if we see the player he's only 25 or 26. If we see the player that we saw at Verona, then he'll be an absolute weapon for them. And then, of course, they've got Martinez, Quarta and Milenkovic in central defence. I really think Vincenzo Italiano has done an incredible job to turn them around in a way that, yeah, many before him have kind of failed. I think they're a really, really attractive side to watch. And I think at the very least, their starting 11, to me, on paper, looks very good as well. So we could see them, rather than talking about them as we were last season of being potentially dragged into a relegation fight, we could see them challenging for European spots, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. But as you've just mentioned, Jack Bonaventura, I think we need to highlight his entry into the Morata Challenge. It's going to be a real contender, isn't it? He has kind of two stabs at a whipped ball, gets dispossessed. The first one he hits against a defender and then manages to, I don't know, it's kind of a double deflection, isn't it, in front of goal.
You need to explain to listeners what the Morata Challenge is in case they don't know.
Yeah, you're correct, Baz. So the Morata Challenge, it was originally the Gagliardini Challenge after an open goal missed by Gagliardini. I can't even remember any of the details of the first one. But Morata took the title last year with an absolutely spectacular double miss off the post. Tried to backheel it. Absolutely zero need for a backheel.
And took the gong,
exactly. So the challenge is now named after him.
Who knows who it will be named after at the end of this season?
Well, it could be the Bonaventura Challenge at this rate. I mean, he's a front runner. So
the
we'll
Jack.
Vote on that. But yeah, that's all about Fiorentina for now.
Before we move on, I just want to say that it could have been a very different story with Gattuso obviously taking the reins at Fiorentina earlier on in the summer. So who knows what could have been. And also, I remember that the three of us starting this podcast 50 episodes ago, we all watched, I believe it was Fiorentina-Torino together. It was the first game of the previous season. And although Fiorentina won, they were pretty abysmal and very boring And despite losing to Roma in the first game of this season, you could immediately see that this version of Fiorentina are a completely different proposition and a lot of fun to watch.
Indeed. So yeah, and Boaz, actually, there was another entry to the Morata challenge, wasn't there, that you tweeted out earlier in the week. We forgot to mention last week who was that, who's in contention with Bonaventura currently?
It's Leonardo Pavoletti of Cagliari, who somehow managed to sky a shot from, he was within the 6-yard box, I believe. And the keeper was in goal, but there was at least a half goal to aim for. But obviously his cousin or his uncle was in the stands. The fans, of course, back in the stadium. So he wanted to dedicate the ball to him.
Good stuff. But yeah, we'll definitely be keeping you updated on the best open goal misses of the league. And yeah, keeping a tab on who's in contention for the so-called Morata challenge. But that's all for this week. Elsewhere, we should mention that Roma, Milan and Lazio all had very high scoring and convincing wins. It's going to be difficult to pick kind of good week this week with, was it Lazio winning 6-1? I think Milan won 4-1, yeah. Roma won 4-1 or 4-0 actually.
Yeah, 4-0 I think it was, Roma.
And all with great performances from various star players like Giroud, Tammy Abraham.
Tammy Abraham getting his
Immobile.
First goal.
So the striker is pulling through for all three teams.
Yeah, and I think not only is it going to be difficult to pick a good week, bad week, but I think it's going to be difficult to pick who the front runners are for the title race this year. We said it at the start of the show, and we're not the only people to be saying it, obviously, but it's such an open title race this season, and can't wait.
Indeed. An early blow, Baz, for Milan is that your sexy new striker has tested positive for COVID. What does this mean? Zlatan's not going to be ready to play, is he?
In theory, Zlatan should be back soon, but obviously this is a huge blow because Giroud looked so confident and so positive in his first two games, and he opened his account in the last game, and he scored a really good penalty as well, so he's going to be missed because Zlatan tends to miss his penalties. But I think Milan have a lot about them going forward, and hopefully they'll be able to pull through. And I think hopefully he's positive, but he doesn't have any symptoms. So hopefully he'll be all right in the long run.
Yeah. Well, anyway, you can't rely on Mandzukic to fill the gap because he's announced his retirement.
So he's decided to donate his salary to nobody anymore.
Yeah, we wish him the best in his retirement. Perhaps not the best spell of his career at Milan. But
great career overall, it has to be said. And that fantastic goal in the final of the Champions League that Juventus eventually lost. Overall, one of these guys who worked his guts off.
Right. Now we do have to face that difficult challenge that I just discussed of choosing good week and bad week. There are a lot of nominations for Good Week. Let's start with Good Week because there are a lot of nominations. Milan, Roma, Lazio all scoring high, all winning with high scoring games. And then there's Empoli with obviously a great result against Juve.
Let's do it by a process of elimination. Milan conceded the goal at home and their opposition looked a little bit lost. So, I mean, I'm sure Milan will get Good Week some other time in their season. So we can take them out of the list.
Yeah, that's fair.
And Roma were playing Salernitana, so I mean, with all due respect, 4-0 against Salernitana is equal to 1-0 against a good team. So we can get them out.
Lazio did have a good game, but equally, I think there were a couple of deflections in there.
Yeah, but I mean, Lazio could also have scored quite a few extra. Look, I mean, I kind of look at it and I think the natural thing to say is you've got to give it to Lazio because they won 6-1. But I just kind of feel like going up against Juve away from home, and obviously Allegri had never lost to Empoli before either as a manager. For me, it's got to be Empoli. It just has
to.
It's a huge upset.
If we give it to Empoli, we can't really give Juve a bad week.
We'll get to that. I think this is a great victory for Empoli coach Andrea Zoli, who famously showed up for a press conference a few years ago after he'd been beaten by Allegri's Juve. And none of the press were left to listen to him, and he kind of made a joke, oh, Allegri's already been here. And this time the press room was obviously packed, and he made a joke saying, hey, nice to see that you've come to speak to me. So I think above all, this is a good week for him, and in a week where a certain number seven was spoken about a lot in Turin, another number seven got on the score sheet.
Yeah, I'm delighted if we're giving it to Empoli.
Okay, let's just give it to Empoli then. And as I said, I think we've eliminated Juve from bad week, because if you lose to the team that have had a good week, it's not that bad.
But have we eliminated and the city of Turin?
Last week we haven't eliminated the whole city, no, because I think Torino are probably now front runners.
Yeah, I think it's got to be Torino. I mean, not so much for losing 2-1, but I think the fact that, you know, what Juric came out and said afterwards, which was basically just as he described it the following day after his sort of post-match press conference, he basically said, look, it was a cry for help. Because basically, you can't appoint a manager who plays in a certain way and give him a bunch of players that play in a different way. I was given guarantees that signings were going to be made. One of the great frustrations about Verona is the fact that we only made loan signings and we made them great and then sent them back to their parent clubs, and their parent clubs sort of reaped all the benefit of that. And I know that they did. Torino did make a few deadline day signings. But yeah, it's that there's a lot of loans in there again, and he seems very, very frustrated. And I think when your manager's coming out 2 days, your new manager's coming out 2 days into his first season saying that, I think it's really, really worrying signs for Torino after they had actually put in a good display in the first game against Atalanta.
Yeah, and that's a good note to move on to the best of the rest / transfer roundup section, as it is this week with all the transfer news coming in. So Torino, who we were just talking about, have signed the brilliantly named Dennis Pratt from Leicester, and they've also added Bacalo from Wolfsburg on closing day. So pretty good deadline day for them. Roma, on the other hand, they've sent the Swedish international goalkeeper Robin Olsen to Sheffield United on loan with an option to buy.
That guy's career is on a downward spiral.
Yeah. And Juventus have picked up Ihattaren from PSV Eindhoven, and the 19-year-old moved immediately to on loan to Sampdoria for the rest of the season. Sampdoria, while we're on that topic, have signed our beer idol Caputo, getting that one done on deadline day. And elsewhere, Matias Zaccagni has completed his transfer to Lazio from Verona. But as Milan have signed someone as well, confirming the purchase of Yacine Adli. Do you know much about this guy?
He's a talented box-to-box midfielder, and it's quite curious that Milan are going to park him at Bordeaux for another year, because they were arguably chasing him throughout the summer. But I guess it does wonders for him starting games in France this season.
Yeah. And you mentioned Robin Olsen being a bit of a journeyman. Cagliari have completed the signing of Caceres, and who's a bit of a journeyman himself, as well as Kaita Bolde. In other news, Vincenzo Montella has joined the Turkish club Adana Demirspor, where he'll be reunited with pod favourite Mario Balotelli.
More about him later.
Yeah. And while we're on the topic of Serie A players signing for obscure European teams, Takehiro Tomiyasu has completed his transfer to Arsenal for 20 million euros. Plus 3 million euros in bonuses. That's Bologna effectively tripling their original investment in the player. So good deal for them. But as we were chatting about this one on WhatsApp, weren't we? How much do we think Bologna is going to miss him? And can he do the impossible and fix Arsenal's defence? What do you reckon?
So first of all, I think Bologna are definitely going to miss him, because he played some really good games the last two seasons. And I probably have a bit of a Milan bias, but I remember him scoring a great goal against Milan at San Siro, what is now two seasons ago. Overall, I'm not sure he's what is going to fix Arsenal's problems, but he's another quality player to add to their squad. This is obviously not the remit of this Italian podcast, but I think Arsenal needs some superstars to really return to their past glory.
Yeah. No disagreement there. And speaking of superstars, this guy was once dubbed the next Buffon. but since rejecting Atleti as a teenager, Scufet has kind of struggled to get his career off the ground, he finds himself starting off again in Cyprus. So best of luck to him. What else have we got? Venezia have signed, or officially signed now, Wales international Ethan Ampadu on loan from Chelsea. So be good to see how he gets on in the league.
It's quite curious because obviously Como were unable to sign Jack Wilshere over the summer because he's a non-EU player right now. But Serie A clubs are allowed to sign, I believe, one or two non-EU players, depending on how many they have, basically. One or two non-EU players. So Ampadu is going to be one of those.
And leaving the last till last, Udinese made the last signing of the Serie A transfer window, reportedly paying around 10 million euros for Portimonese striker Beto. So that's it for our transfer roundup slash best of the rest. Moving on to our Scudetto. So first one is from Viola Club Israel. After we run out of beers, what is our go-to alcohol? I mean, for me, it kind of depends what's around.
I was going to say, I like the implication that we're raging alcoholics and that we just...
It's not wrong.
but you've just completely backed up that suggestion. So it's red wine for me, by the way. I'll keep it brief.
We record a podcast for 2 hours a week, and then for the remaining time of the week, we just get plastered. I like Negronis, Bagliato, if this is the question, or Spritz once in a while.
Okay, good answers. And from Milan Obsession, there's one specifically for you here, Boaz. So with big players like Lukaku and Ronaldo abandoning the league and their clubs, what do you think it says about the dedication of other players like Castillejo and Conti resisting the urge to move and staying loyal to Milan?
I'm tempted to give a really satirical answer, but since producer Ken is on my back about this, I'm just going to say that both players in question just didn't have any much interest in them. And if I were them, I would also stay at a Champions League club as opposed to going to some lower league team and battling it out. Also, Castillejo has a side career as an Instagram model, so what does he care?
Okay, I'm not sure that's the answer that Milan Obsession was looking for, but thanks very much. We've got another one from Milan Obsession, actually. So if each of us had to choose a Serie A player that most resembled us in personality, and that can be on or off the pitch, who would it be? And also can be a current or past player. I didn't actually realise it could be a past player, because I was going to say for my off-the-pitch one, Raja Nainggolan, but I'm now tempted to change it to Gazza.
Given your recent admission, I think Nainggolan is a great option for you.
Yeah.
And probably on the pitch, I was looking at this earlier, it's got to be Di Lorenzo, who's a right-back that loves to get forward, is always out of position and prone to get booked. Kenny, have you given this some thought?
I have done, yeah. The honest answer is that my dream would be to be like Roberto Baggio on the field and Martin de Roon off the field with his fantastic social media activity. The reality is probably that I'm more like Martin de Roon on the field and Roberto Baggio off the field is perhaps not as entertaining.
Very good. And how about you, Baz?
I mean, I do have a serious side to me, but particularly on this podcast, I'd like to think I'm a little bit like Ronaldinho, unexpected. Sometimes I'll throw some magic your way. Other times you'll cringe and think, what's he going to say next?
Sometimes just stays out all night partying, doesn't turn up for the recording, that sort of thing.
Sometimes goes through to Bolivia with a fake passport, you know, just standard stuff.
And are we getting an on the field or...?
On the field, I'd like to think maybe in my mind I was a little bit of a Pablo Montero because at least in my younger days I was a very limited player, but I made sure that my opposition knew exactly where I was and I was a bit of a tough bastard.
Yeah, an English player. Okay, so we've got a question here from Sigmund Vestergaard, and Sigmund says that he seems to remember that Inter always... and including this year, scored loads of goals on the opening day. Is this correct, Baz, or is he imagining it? I know you mentioned last week that Inter always score a lot of goals against Genoa, but does this extend to the first day, whoever they play?
So actually, I went back and checked the stats, and Inter are the team that, since I checked since 1990, And they're the team who have scored the most goals on opening day, including this past game. They've scored 61 goals on opening day, which contrasts to Juventus, who are second with 57.
Wow. And Good research.
Yeah, and there's teams in there like Venezia who've only got one goal on opening day ever, having played three Serie A seasons in this period. But the top five teams are Inter, Juve, Milan, Roma, Lazio, and Atalanta, which is nice considering the Atalanta have played far fewer seasons in Serie A than the other teams, but obviously they get a lot of goals.
Yeah, good question as well, by the way.
Yeah, indeed. And we've got another question from Sigmund, actually. He wants to know our thoughts on Damsgaard from Sampdoria. Kenny, you answered this question when it was asked by a Spurs fan last season, thinking that he might move over there. But any advance on what you said before?
No, I mean, I think what I said before was that he was a scorer of great goals, though not a great goal scorer, which I think all of Europe has now witnessed through the Euros as well. I think all of Europe has witnessed as well that, you know, he's just he is a great talent. A Danish friend of mine said to me that he can't last 90 minutes, but, you know, he's still young. So if that is something that he's known in Denmark for, presumably that's something that will be, you know, coached into him. Yeah, great, great talent. Really, really exciting. Really fun to watch.
And Philip asks us if there are any particular players from any of the promoted clubs that we're looking forward to seeing. And he says it could be grizzled vets or promising youngsters.
I mean, I'd like to say that Patrick Cutrone kind of falls under both those categories because he seems to have been around since forever.
Good shout. And
he's played for four or five clubs now. And in my mind, he's still like a promising Milan youngster. But Empoli have decided to give him a chance and he's looked good. I'd like to see him do well. And the other guy from Empoli is Pinamonti, who's kind of has a similar story. He's an Inter striker who's been constantly loaned out. And this is his chance to show that he can do it in Serie A level.
Any to add to that? I was just going to say, from my very, very limited experience watching Empoli, that Bandinelli looked very good.
Yeah,
But any others to add, Kenny?
I'm really excited to see Ruggeri at Salernitana. This is a very selfish and Atalanta-focused answer, but he looked great. The times he did get a chance to come on last season, he's really, really young. It looks like one of those typical Atalanta moves, best for all parties involved. It'd be great to see him, you know, get some proper game time, develop, get some Serie A experience, and hopefully he'll, you know, be beneficial to Salernitana as well, because as I said, he looked great. Looking forward to seeing what he can do.
And this next question is from good friend of the pod, Frank, who said that he knows it's early days, but do we think it would be more memorable and iconic to Mourinho's legacy if he would win the Scudetto with Roma this season? Would that be more iconic than the Inter treble? He's a lifetime Inter fan, is Frank, but he actually thinks that a Roma Scudetto might be more meaningful and perhaps a greater achievement.
I don't know. I think that does Roma as a club a bit of a disservice, to be honest. Yes, last season they were nowhere near the conversation, but I mean, I think it's going to take some beating to, you know, to beat what he did at Inter.
Yeah, I mean, if he won the Scudetto with Roma this season, then maybe.
I think Frank's onto something here, because Rome is a city that treats its football in a crazy way, and they haven't had that many championships or trophies for that matter. So every win is seen as kind of a watershed moment. And those of us who remember the Fabio Capello Scudetto know how important it is to the city. And I think Mourinho so far has been making all the right moves and saying all the right things. And it'll be interesting to see how he acts once the going gets tough, because right now with him like eating pizza on trains and looking very dandy, it's lovable Mourinho, and it's the kind of Mourinho we all want to see. So I mean, I think it would be an incredible achievement should Roma win the league, but it's not going to happen. So we'll see. Use this quote in a few months.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously I've been making cynical comments about Mourinho on this podcast for a few weeks or months now. But actually, I don't think he's a terrible manager. I think he could certainly win a cup with Roma. But I just don't think the kind of manager that he is now, I just don't think he can really like create a team that has that consistency to be able to win a title. I don't know what you guys think about
it. I think something that Kenny touched on in, I think it was two episodes ago, was that of all the teams in Serie A, maybe the team that really needed a nasty streak was Roma, because they're always a little bit too fancy, perhaps a little bit uninterested. And Mourinho, while his football is not always the most exciting, although thus far this season it's been great, one thing he does instill is kind of a hardworking mentality. So so far it bodes well, and why not?
I'm sure we'll get a chance to talk about this in greater depth in the coming weeks, but not 100% sure I agree. But anyway, we've got another question from Alex, who says, "Who?" He actually says what, but I think it's who's your favourite Argentinian player right now in Serie A? And why is it El Chino Martinez Quarta?
I think it's an interesting question to come right now, because it's at the period when quite a few Argentinian players have left Serie A. Of course, we had Papu Gomez leave in January last year, but also we had De Paul leave. We had Cristian Romero going to Tottenham. We had Germán Pizarro moving to Betis. So it seems like a good place to start with Alex's boy, El Chino Martinez Quarta, because he's done a great job. And as Kenny said earlier, I keep quoting you, Kenny, but as Kenny said earlier, he's been fundamental in that back line for Fiorentina, and he seems like a fun defender to watch.
For me, the answer to this question will always start and end with Paulo Dybala. He had a terrible time last season, but obviously there were COVID reasons behind that. I think he's just a glorious footballer.
He is a lovely, lovely player, isn't he? Been enjoying him already this season, and I'm sure that will continue. But we should move on now to the honourable and dishonourable mentions. And I want to start this one by giving a dishonourable to the ball, which is being used in Serie A this season. I don't know if any of you know, it looks like a child's like toy.
A mold master.
It looks like a mold master, exactly. It looks like it's all one piece of plastic.
Yeah, it's horrific.
I'm sure it's not, but like the ridges give that impression. And I'm just not a fan. So sorry, guys. Kenny, I think we spoke briefly about Torino earlier in a slightly negative tone, but we did want to give them an honourable mention.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is because Dennis Law, who I think he only actually had one season at Torino, but obviously one of the, I think, Scotland's only ever Ballon d'Or winner, actually. And he announced last week that he was fighting, or that he was... in the early stages of dementia. He had been diagnosed with it, and Torino sent out a message saying, "Come on, Dennis, we are close to you with all our affection." And it just seemed like they didn't have to do it, and it was very nice. I'm sure very much appreciated as well.
Yeah, for sure, and obviously very fondly remembered there. Boaz, just on a complete change of tone, we have to give an honourable to Junior Mesias, don't we? He's got a lot of press in the past week for his antics as a fridge delivery man prior to being a professional footballer. But I think there's actually more to this story.
To be honest, we highlighted him at the beginning of last season when Crotone came up, when obviously the birthplace of the crouton. And we said that he was quite a special player. But something that's important to say about his backstory that doesn't seem to have been picked up so much is that actually he gave up on football altogether, and there was this coach that asked him to join his team in Eccellenza, and Messias said, "Listen, I've got this job as a fridge delivery guy, and I need to make money for my family. I can't be just going around playing football." And once this coach became a coach in Serie D, he called this guy up again, and he's like, "Listen, I can give you the same salary you're making right now as a fridge delivery guy. Just come play football." And he had to convince the president of this team to play some unknown Brazilian and pay him what is a decent amount in Serie D. And also they had to work on his work permit. So overall, it's not just, it's a story. He's going to be playing in the Champions League very shortly, and to consider that just a few years ago he was playing in non-league is crazy.
That is amazing. He's almost sold out by becoming a footballer. Maybe his true passion was in fridge delivery.
And he's not a spring chicken. He's 30, but maybe something that will benefit him is that until he was about 25, he never did any proper training, and he didn't really wear his body out except for lifting fridges, I guess.
Mate, have you ever delivered a fridge? It's fucking hard work.
I haven't, but I assume that you're working different muscles to what you're using when you're playing football. So now he has a sturdy upper body, and now he can start working out his legs. You know, and don't forget leg day, basically.
Yeah. My experience of... I've never delivered fridges, but just lifting fridges, moving fridges around. So it's hard work. Don't underestimate that. Kenny... Please give us your goals, so we can stop talking about this. And just to end,
it's nice that Messi did end up in Italy after all, although it's Messias and not we got a Messiah after all, is what I was going to say.
Yeah, and also he's a Milan, not Napoli. So, but anyway, Kenny, goals honourables, go.
Goals honourables, yes, okay, of course. So this week, the first one's going to Vlahovic for what was almost impossible header, but it was a great move that was kind of indicative of Italiano's play, really, what we were talking about. Just lovely sort of sweeping move and really, really difficult to tuck away, and he did it expertly into the bottom corner. My second goals honourables for Felipe Anderson, there was a bit of controversy about this goal. The suggestion was that it was a high boot, but I think when you see the replays, it was not at all. I mean, the defender's head was some distance away from the ball or his foot. There was no sort of backing out, but basically just took a long pass and just flicked it over the defender, raced on, rounded, well, not didn't round the keeper, but took the ball out wide and finished it off expertly. And my final one is for Chiesa, the goal that we've already spoken about, the wonderful effort in that Italy-Bulgaria game.
Good stuff. And then, Boaz, this next honourable actually confused me a little bit, because we've just said that the last signing of the window was made by Udinese, but now we're giving honourable to Galliani for making his final signing 46 seconds before the transfer window closes.
I'm guessing we're talking about Serie A versus Serie B, though.
Exactly. The Udinese signing was the very final signing of the Serie A. However, Adriano Galliani, who was the former chief at Milan and kind of an Uncle Fester impersonator at times, managed to deposit the contract for Luca Marone 46 seconds before the market was shutting at 8:00 13 seconds. Crazy.
That is crazy. We've got to give a dishonorable, unfortunately, to our boy Mario Balotelli for his on-pitch tantrum.
We mentioned earlier that Aeroplanino was going to be his new manager in Turkey, but Balotelli was seen when he was subbed off going crazy on the bench and starting hitting his teammate, who he's known for about 2 weeks as well. He's been there for 2 weeks. And he's just slapping this guy out of like complete frustration for being subbed. And promptly the team sacked their manager and brought Vincenzo Montella.
So maybe it's actually an honorable, but anyway.
I keep saying this, but in Italy, we're seriously lacking a number nine again last night. And in a parallel universe, Balotelli would have been there to score a hat-trick.
Kenny, did you want to give an honourable to AZ Alkmaar?
I am, yes. Yes, this is related to the signing of Coop Miners by Atalanta. Nevertheless, AZ Alkmaar decided to field him in their league game. And then at the end of the game, he went around giving a big emotional farewell. So having the gall to field a player that you've just sold for millions of euros, you know, just taking whatever risks. I just think it's pretty bold.
Yeah, I know a lot of Madrid fans were very annoyed with Mbappe for playing for PSG when he was supposed to be requesting a transfer. So I'm not sure how they would have felt if he'd played after being transferred.
Yeah, exactly.
And Boaz, you've got an honourable for Pepe Reina for his assists.
Pepe Reina served his sixth Serie A assist in his career, which makes him the goalkeeper with the most assists in Serie A. And for those of you who play Fantacalcio in Italy, it might be a good idea to put him in goal for this.
And I just wanted to give a light-hearted dishonourable to Cristiano. I know how difficult it can be. We're trying to cover a league in a different language. But you really should learn to spell thank you after spending 3 seasons playing there.
Yeah. Possibly our last ever, sadly, our last ever dishonourable or honourable for Cristiano.
Well, you never know. I mean, there's a good chance he might play against an Italian team and do something dishonourable worthy, but...
Perhaps get himself into the Morata challenge, maybe.
Well, one can only hope.
It's quite indicative of his Juve career that he got that title, because he really made no effort to learn Italian at any stage of these last 3 years.
Yeah. Neither he or his social media team
exactly
made any attempt. Anyway, we should end on... is this a double dishonourable for Lazio?
I'm not sure this is a dishonourable for Lazio, or maybe Lazio and Salernitana, or maybe Lotito, we'll see, but... There's a player called Gondo who was on loan from Lazio to Salernitana for the last couple of seasons. And of course, Lazio and Salernitana are not allowed to make any moves between them now because they were once owned by the same person. And yet this player called Gondo rescinded his deal with Lazio and within a couple of hours rocked up at Salernitana. I'm not saying something shady was going on, but something shady was going on.
Yeah, and my my dishonourable for Lazio is sticking with the transfer theme, although perhaps less controversial, although not without controversy. And it's this story that Lazio apparently missed out on signing Kostic from Eintracht Frankfurt because they had a typo on their on the fax that they sent through. Although it has to be said that this has been disputed in various quarters, but nonetheless, to miss out on one of your summer targets for typo is quite a spectacular fail.
Apparently, they wrote Frankfurt instead of Frankfurt, so they left out the K. If this is true, it's phenomenal stuff, and it keeps Lazio in the running for most honourables/dishonourables. I love it.
Absolutely. And on that note, we will leave you for this week. If you don't already, please do subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your audio. We'll be back next week to preview the next round of Serie A games. Until then, enjoy the international football. La Roma è campione d'Italia per la stagione 2000-2001. Il titolo del 2008, l'Inter è campione d'Italia, 16° scudetto per la squadra nerazzurra. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.